From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on this Monday morning, just before Yom Kippur, where it seems to have rained a great deal, which is very good to see and very nice. Our first big rains of the season, some lovely thunderstorms, and it's just really nice because also just cleans out the air. Which has been very, very like dirty and hectic the last while. So I don't know if you've been a pollen sufferer, then I'm sure that you will be welcoming the lovely rains that we have had in the last while. And we have a lovely show ahead for you this week. It's a lot of politics. I know we've done a bit of culture the last few weeks. But we've got a lot of current affairs going on in the world at the moment. So we're going to be looking into it. So what are going on? What is happening that you should know about? Well, we're going to be talking about a few things. We're going to talk about South African universities and the funding that they're taking from dodgy actors. We've been talking about a book that maybe you should read if you're confused about what is going on at the UN. We're going to be having a look at accountability seeping into the South African political system. We're going to have a look at things that are working in Johannesburg, people that are trying to fix them, and what can be done to supercharge those efforts. And then we will have a look, because it is this time of the year that it is, we're going to be looking at the sweet story of honey being grown in South Africa. Can you grow honey? I suppose you can. Honey created, I don't know, bead, I'm not sure what it is, but basically an Israeli development agency that is working to help South African beekeepers be better with their honey. So that is all coming up on the show today. And the other part of the show, which is coming up, we do hope, is that your input is what we want. We want to hear from you. We want to get your input into what we are talking about on the show. So if you want to do that, 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. That is the WhatsApp line, and we will be very happy to take your inputs into what we have to say today. So let's start off with universities in South Africa and where they're at. And what are some of the things that are going on that we should be looking out for and be a little bit concerned about, perhaps. So, as you will probably know, the South African universities since October 7th have actually been relatively quiet when it comes to the issue of Israel, anti-Semitism, Jews. I'm not saying that there's nothing going on. There was a couple days early on in the war at UCT where there was some very hectic student activities. There's some nasty, if you go to Wits, there's some nasty posters and pictures and stuff that are up. But if you compare it to the US campuses and the campuses around the world, there really isn't all that much going on. The encampments that you had at Western universities all around the world, I think they lasted exactly 3 days, the one in Cape Town and the one in Johannesburg, and simply got no traction. So sort of at the student level, you know, you always get radical students, but really there isn't all that much going on. At the top end of the universities, generally speaking, there also hasn't been that much interest, depending on where you've looked. At Stellenbosch, for example, there's been calls for that university to boycott Israel. They've resisted it. At Wits, the people there have shown exactly no interest. Same at Tux, same at UJ. So the executives of the universities in our country sort of have looked at this issue and said, look, we don't really want to engage with it, and we will, you know, let other people do what they want to do, but we're not getting involved. So that, between the two of those, meant that there hasn't been all that much activity. And it's an interesting thing, right? Because basically our universities are controlled either by the EFF or by the ANC, or what they call SASCO, or the ANC Youth League. It's all the same thing. And that's, you know, and that's where it's at. And so it shows you that amongst, even though it's a kind of a debating point amongst students, it's not something that actually really gets your average student, even your average highly politicized student, out of bed in the morning. Now, the one obvious caveat to that, in some ways, has been the University of Cape Town, right? During the war, you had this thing that bubbled up for a boycott of Israel, and that has commenced. The council there took a decision to do that. And that has cost the university, according to some estimates, and these are university estimates, they don't come from outside, close to R500 million. And some of that is made up through donors who specifically signed up in their contracts to that if you started messing with academic freedom, then there would be no money. And so there was big chunks of that got pulled. Other donors who are looking at bursaries for students, the estimates there that at least 50 bursaries of underprivileged kids are at risk because of this behavior. But of course, the big money has been from the Americans, because Americans doing a lot of healthcare funding, and they were been starting to pull that anyway out of the system, but have been particularly punitive in the case of UCT because of this Israel stuff. Because although UCT doesn't do any actual, at an institutional level, any actual engagement with Israel, a lot of their researchers are in these big multi-country discussions and research consortia of which Israel's a part. And so the Americans are saying, well, then we're not going to support you. So UCT's done itself a real damage. And where it's come from at UCT, and indeed everywhere where you're seeing this as an issue, is you're seeing it at the level of the staff. So you'll see Naledi Pandor, they're having her at Stellenbosch, even though Stellenbosch is not all that interested in this topic. We've seen Jeremy Corbyn, the insane anti-Semitic left-wing head of the Labour Party, is going to be trying to talk at UCT. You've seen in Tux one or two problematic speakers. So really what's happened is that the lecturers in these places are really starting to push the pace. And in some cases are getting frustrated because they're not able to get anywhere with the management and the students. And this is causing quite a lot of issues as they go forward. So that is the state of things. But what I want to talk about after the break is a change in status that we're starting to see with South African universities, particularly on the funding side. Because what I've described up till now has really been the sort of status quo for South African universities in the last 10 or 20 years. And now we're starting to see a particular shift. That's coming up just after this. I'm Benji Shulman. This is 101.9 High FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 High FM. And it's interesting that spotlight there, talking about Aaron Kluk, because, of course, he did win the Nobel Prize, as they said. And he's one of only four winners of the Nobel Prize that was attended at Wits University. The others were Sydney Brenner, the author, Nadine Gordimer, and of course Nelson Mandela. So you had three Jews and Nelson Mandela, who won the Nobel Prize at Wits. So that's very interesting. We are talking about universities at the moment. By the way, if you want to be part of the conversation, 061-895-1019. That is the discussion line. And we're talking today about a variety of things. But just before the break, we were covering the question of the university climate in South Africa. So as I said before the break, we just looked at the students, the management, and the lecturers, and the kind of status quo before October 7th that was going on. Now we're starting to see, a new phase, because there were really, before the war, there was only one university that had a proper Israeli boycott, and that was UJ, that didn't do institutional engagement. Then during the war, we had Cape Town. And then I think we, in the run-up, or maybe during a couple of like non-important universities that, or not even more like the technical colleges that sort of had this boycott. So I think TUT had something about that. There was a, I think, the University of the Fort Hare, UWC might have. So like sort of second tier, third tier higher education places that were engaged in this stuff. But what's happened now is that we're starting to see the dynamic that has been playing out in American universities start to come to South Africa. So, for example, the University of Johannesburg has just inaugurated a new, not really a department, but a research center explicitly and entirely funded by Qatar. And what you've seen in American universities is that Qatari money, which really flows into the billions of dollars, has flowed into American universities as a way of trying to affect the discourse. Now, obviously, states work with universities all the time. That's not unusual. And states from different countries work with them. But in the case of Qatar, it's not even that they're doing any kind of research. They're sort of explicitly there just to promote Qatari national interests. And of course, the first event that they have is not anything to do with research, but is some sort of roundtable with Durko and why, and a sort of a discussion on what Qatar can do in international affairs. And Qatar has been increasingly moving into Africa. We've seen it in Congo, where they've been negotiating peace treaties, buying up mineral rights, whatever. And of course, UJ has this boycott ban on engagement with Israeli entities. And that ban came because they didn't want to deal with Israel on water issues. And this was a different, an Israeli university. It wasn't a government department. And the university that was Ben Gurion, and they sort of eventually decided they didn't want to work with Ben Gurion on a vital things such as water, but they will take Qatari money to basically do Qatari funded campaigns and whitewash their appalling human rights abuses in the Middle East and the world, and they're quite happy to do that. So that's on UJ, and at UCT, where they've now lost R500 million in funding, you're now seeing some proposals from BRICS for them to try and make that up. So now we're starting to see them doing partnerships with Iran. They're doing Russia and China. All of these are proposals where the university is driving to try and get those sorts of engagements going. Also, whilst taking away places from South African students for medical students from Gaza, etc. So there is all of this dynamic that is happening at the moment, and this is not new, by the way. There's something both at UJ and UCT, and I think there might be a couple of others, something called the Confucius Institute, which is a Chinese-linked center that you have all over the world, which is there to drive the talking points of the Chinese Communist Party. They do teach Mandarin and do some cultural stuff, but really what you'll often find is that those centers are in the media talking about Chinese foreign policy in different newspapers and on TV, and that's why they exist. So South African universities are quite happy to take money from authoritarian governments, even when it has very little sort of research agenda connected to it, but they're also happy to oppose Israel and not engage there with them and with members of the Jewish community. And that is very concerning. And we should be pushing as hard as we can to hold them to account. And it's something which we're going to need to keep an eye on, because so far South African universities have been able somewhat to avoid the traps that the Americans and their British counterparts have fallen into. But with these sorts of petrodollars, that might be a problem. So definitely something to look out for, and something we're going to have to keep an eye on those who are interested in universities being places of learning and not just places of propaganda. Now, Rosh Hashanah, the new year, it is time to show your appreciation and to thank people. If you want to send a special gift to someone in South Africa, the Selwyn Siegel Gift Shop has a wide range of beautiful gifts for all tastes across a wide range of prices, and they deliver worldwide. Visit their website, selwynsiegelgift.co.za. That's selwynsiegelgift.co.za. Now, I want to take you through a few headlines which maybe you would have missed in the hubbub that is South African politics in the last while, because I think it shows and reflects something that is changing in our particular polity, and it's worth paying attention to. So, headline number one, Dada Morero, the mayor of Johannesburg, called to Parliament by the Water Committee to ask why water is not being given to residents. SCOPA, the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, that's the big parliamentary body that deals with spending, opens an inquiry. We haven't had an inquiry from SCOPA in something like 20 years, into the RAF, which is the Road Accident Fund, which has been chronically underfunded and looted and stolen from, and the inquiry into what is going on in the RAF. We've had a Minister of Education being fired, the only second minister ever in the history of the New South Africa to be fired, and she was fired over corrupt individuals and ANC-connected people that were put onto the boards of the CETAs, which are these education sector training authorities. We had a VAT increase, which was then not passed because of the budget. And we also now have this Mthlanga Commission of Inquiry about what is going on in the police. We had the MP, Liam Jacobs, who before he was the MP, for the DA, he was basically terrorizing people on social media who were in the sports federations, who had been mismanaging their funds and in the arts and culture side of things. And they were being called to Parliament, and then he was grilling them quite aggressively and perhaps even unkindly on social media, which he was then getting a lot of likes for. And this week we heard the PA say to the ANC that unless Kenny Kuneni, who was cleared of some other wrongdoing, was allowed back onto the mail committee, that they were going to pull out of the GNU. So these are all a bunch of stories. And as you would have noticed, they don't really have much to do with one another. Water doesn't necessarily have to do with the RAF. Some little argy-bargy inside the GNU doesn't have anything to do with sports and arts and culture. So why am I bringing it up? Because I think, in my view, that what they represent, what these things represent, is a sort of change in accountability that is starting to seep into our political system. And the reason for that is that basically the ANC is now below 40%, which means some of their positions they don't have control over anymore. They don't have control over the certain portfolios in the government. But they also, and this is where this is coming from, don't have the mayorship of places in parliament, not the mayorship, but the head of the parliament, and because of that, they have these gaps that are developing in their ability to cover things. And when we come back after the break, we're going to be exploring that and seeing what effect is it having on the political system in South Africa.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM. And before the break, we were discussing the question of accountability in the South African political system and what it means. And what I was saying before the break is that particularly in Parliament, basically the ANC has lost control of the parliamentary committees whose job it is to actually look into and oversee what has been going on in the different ministries. So you have the government, you have the ministers, you have the ministries, and they do different work. And then they are supposed to be accountable to Parliament, who is supposed to pass the laws and look into what has been going on. But over time, at the beginning, there was some of the oversight at the beginning of the new South Africa. But as the ANC got more and more corrupt and tried to engage more and more in some of their issues, they were actually physically blocking what was going on in Parliament and actually stopping active scrutiny. And so as that's fallen away, you're finding that because there's so much rot in various systems, you actually are finding that the opposition people who are ahead of some of these committees are starting to dig up what's going on and then make a big noise about it. And that's what you're starting to see with some of this stuff. And I'm not going to say to you that I think that this is all necessarily positive. So, for example, we had, as I said to you, the education minister was fired and replaced with another education minister who's actually worse than the first one. Because he was the deputy and he's a member of the Communist Party, and he immediately sort of started doing the same thing as she was doing. So, you know, as long as you have ANC people in charge, they'll still do bad things. But this was, you know, something now, you know, now he's the one who's having to face the music all the time over these appointments. So it doesn't always work out so well. But on the other hand, you have, for example, in the ICT ministry and the telecommunications, the DA minister there who's redoing the regulations so that BEE isn't such a factor in the investment climate. And this means that people might be able to get decent internet in their homes in rural areas via Starlink and other services. So there is kind of swings and roundabouts. It doesn't solve the key problem of the fact that, you know, certain bodies are just not doing their jobs. It doesn't solve the growth issue, which we really need. But it does start to expose some of what's going on in a very real way and put people under pressure. And I think the more that we see this, the more that you're going to get more change in the country, because the bad actors are sort of going to be getting out the way. And this applies really to the local level as well, right? So this weekend, as part of Heritage Day celebrations, there's a group called Josie My Josie and the Johannesburg In Your Pocket, which are all sort of groups that are working on promoting things going on in Johannesburg. And for Heritage Month, they had walks in different areas highlighting heritage of the city. So I went on one in Lawrenceville, where they did a sort of walk on along the beginnings of the Yixkei, which is a horribly, horribly impacted river, as you all know. It smells terrible. It's there's sewage leaking into it, all sorts of things. And the question really is, like, how do you clean something like that up? Because it's not just about black bags and rubbish, although that is something. But, you know, there's a question of where's the water going to, what pollution sources are coming in. How can you get the pollution out? How much water is going in? What are the animals that are being affected? How is the neighborhood using it? And so there's a group called Water for the Future who have been working in this area to try and figure out, even like scientifically, how do you start to fix the water in that area? And what's interesting about that particular area is in the Rentsville is that the headquarters of Nando's is in that area. There's Victoria Yards. And so you have some big corporate players, big capital players, who are sort of being involved there and have decided to stick around. And they said, look, you know, this is where our headquarters are. We're not going to move to Sandton. We're going to actually stick around and say, you know, this is what we want, and we want to make the place better. And so they are looking for ways to start to improve the community around them. And that's this Water for the Future, I think, gets a lot of funding from those corporates in the area. And they have all sorts of other projects for the kids in the area and employment and all sorts of things to try and uplift it and make sure that that particular area actually is working. And that is sort of what you might call moral capital. People who have money, who take the choice and the opportunity to use that money to not just enrich themselves, but to really sort of work in the communities in which they're involved. But what you see is that they can't do it themselves, right? The city is, in fact, very involved in helping out with this project. But at the end of the day, the fish really does rot from the head. And as long as the city is not promoting employment so that people have jobs, and as long as the city is doing hugely corrupt deals in the property sector and is not providing electricity and the water, not in the river, but actually in the pipes, and doing the basic things that cities are supposed to do with maintenance of the sidewalks and grass and whatever, then you're not going to get the changes that you need. But even if you have a proper city mayor who really has the power to do things, and that in this case looks as though it may be the candidate might be Helen Ziller. She's sort of put her candidacy out to the public in the last week. And if you look at some of the analysts and they look into the actual voting patterns, there is a good chance, first of all, that the DA will very likely be the biggest party in the city by the end of the next election, which is about a year. But they may also be able to, depending on how it goes, form a coalition with smaller parties so that they have a stable coalition and can start cleaning things up. But even in that case, the rot is very deep in Johannesburg, and the structure of the city is such that it's actually more complicated than other cities. I won't go too much into it, but basically they don't just have departments. There's also like a little company inside each department which is supposed to improve service delivery. I'm not always sure that's the case. But that is the structure. And so what it's going to take, let's assume that Helen Ziller gets in, and she'll only get in if people vote and get out there and vote, is that what you're going to need is that sort of mayor, technocratic, getting down to the job of doing the right things in the city, and then people coming to the party, like the community in Lawrenceville is trying to clean up its own backyard, figure out the problems, and sort of take it forward. And that's really what the solution is going to look like. So there's lots of good things happening in our city, but we're going to have to really you're going to have to change the political leadership if you want those smaller things to make a difference. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 High FM. So a few things to look out for if you want to understand this current moment. One of them, I think, is worth reading is a book called Moynihan's Moment, which is Zionism as Racism and the United Nations Resolution of 1973. And it talks about how it came to be that in the UN in 1973, there was this resolution that compared Zionism to racism, what the effects were, which we're in fact still living with, and why it happened and how it was repealed. And I got thinking about this book. It's by Gil Troy, and I encourage you to read it if you have the chance, or to order it. It's called Moynihan's Moment by Gil Troy. And it kind of talks about the moment that we have just right now, where you really have a big pile on onto Israel in the international community. We're seeing it in the media. We're seeing it in civil society. Of course, we just saw it last week in the United Nations. And of course, a lot of people have very strong opinions on the war, as they should, and on Netanyahu. So we have a message here from Warren, and he believes that Netanyahu should be held account for getting us into this mess. And that's fine. I think that there's a lot of people in Israel who have that viewpoint. But the truth is that even when Naftali Bennett was in charge, and he's not Netanyahu, we still had the international environment to take account of. And that's, this book talked about the big actors that were engaged in this, and why they did it, and what it looked like, what America looked like at the time, and what the Europeans looked like at the time, and why we might be in that moment again in some way, shape, or form, particularly with the ICJ. Because regardless of what you think of the war, in my experience in the last 2 years, whenever there's a lot of screaming, that means Hamas is under pressure. And we're seeing a lot of screaming at the moment. So, you know, there is a big argument to say, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't be going into Gaza City as the IDF because there's no military reason. The other side says, well, Hamas will still be standing. Then what's the point? And then the counterpoint to that is, you know, well, we just need to degrade them. I'm not getting into that debate, but the point is that people can have it and should have it. And in the meantime, we're going to have to deal with the international community. So if you want to get a sense about the last time that this really became an issue, then go and check out this book, Moynihan's Moment, The United Nations and Zionism is Racism by Gil Troy. It will really help you to understand the politics of the 70s and why we are going back to that 70s show, it seems, at the UN. And then the last point, because it is Yom Kippur and the fast, and I hope that everyone has a great and meaningful fast on a Thursday, is at this time of the year, of course, we talk about honey. And there's a great little project that it goes going on in the Eastern Cape. There's a group called the Mensch Network. You can go look them up. And they work with the Joint Distribution Committee, Israel office. And they have been, in the last few years, working with a rural woman in the Eastern Cape and other parts of the country, I think Limpopo, to produce honey that can be used for Rosh Hashanah, for whenever you want honey. And it's just really good to see. And in fact, beekeepers in general in South Africa really appreciate Israeli tech. There's been a few conferences where beekeepers have come out and done this sort of thing. And it just goes to show that even in this time in sort of in the sort of environment that we are, that you can still find that good people are doing good work with people who are working hard to improve their own lives, and that we can all be part of that together. So that brings us to the end of the show for today. Thank you to everyone who helped put it together. Craig, who pushes all the big red buttons. Vusi is on the sound. And to you, dear listener, who joins us every single week, do join us again next week on the New Blue Review.